Case Closed, Crime Stories from the Golden Age of Radio. Welcome back to Case Closed, your hour of old-time radio crime stories brought to you every Wednesday by RelicRadio.com. We'll start off this week with Let George Do It, episode from that series from March 27th, 1950, titled The Tears of Sorrow. After that, it's Rocky Jordan and Desert Betrayal. That episode aired May 29th, 1949.
Personal notice, danger's my stock and trade. If the job's too tough for you to handle, you got a job for me, George Valentine. Write full details. Standard Oil Company of California, on behalf of independent Chevron gas stations and Standard stations throughout the West, invites you to Let George Do It. The Tears of Sorrow, another adventure of George Valentine.
Dear Mr. Valentine, you ever hear a little Malayan with black earrings and white smiling teeth bust out laughing like he just won a lottery and say, "Look at me, boss. I'm so happy. Yes, yes, I got tears of sorrow." Yeah, I know. You think I'm crazy. So do I. So does the Western Milk and Separator Company. That's the outfit I work for. I travel in farm supplies. My district is Eastern California, Arizona, New Mexico. But, Valentine, there's one place on my route I can't stay away from. It's the dullest, saddest, poorest, loneliest place on all of Route 113. Gas, hamburgers, motel, and the Malayan. The place is called Stillman's Last Chance. Brother, it is. Now, listen. Last time I was there, I bumped into the wrong cabin by mistake. I never see what happens, except I get a knife in my face, a foot in my stomach, and a fist on my jaw. The next thing I know, I'm waking up between my own proper sheets, and nobody will say who put me to bed. Nobody will explain a note I find in my pocket which says, "Stop asking questions or you'll have a worse accident." Valentine, I'm going back to that place. But I'm no hero. I need your help. If you could come meet me there, drive out on Highway 113.
Stillman's Last Chance, huh? Last chance at what?
Last chance at Stillman's going broke, that's all.
I get it.
Say, I noticed your license plate. California, huh? I got friends in Hollywood.
Is that so?
Sure. I thought of going out there sometimes. There's one fella, he says I'm a type they don't get very often. He was just passing through and he seen me. I don't know, though.
Well, you're very attractive.
Of course, this dress is a little tight. It's pretty hard keeping your skin like this with all the dust. I think a girl owes it to herself, no matter where she is.
Yes. Yes, of course.
So do I. Guess your husband ain't much interested in these abstractions, is he?
He's not my husband.
Oh? Well, if you'd like some coffee, mister. Hey, look, lady. If you'd like to go back and wash your hands or anything...
Hey, Lucy! Lucy!
Excuse me. Yeah, Mac? Here I am. I told you there was a customer.
Get in here, finish the dishes. I'll take care of them.
Your name's Lucy, George. Shall I tell her you're a casting director?
Yeah, thanks a lot. Let's look around and find this crazy salesman.
Well, Mr. Guthrie, I've seen what the attraction is here. Lucy.
Yeah. No wonder you couldn't stay away from this place.
Now, just because I'm a traveling salesman. Hey, wait, I get a little music on here so they can't hear us. That Lucy there, she's his wife.
His what? You mean that older man?
Sure, sourpuss. That's Max Stillman. He owns the place. Makes no bones about it either. And don't forget he owns the girl with the wandering eyes, too. It's like the movies, isn't it? Middle-aged man with a frizzle-top young wife way out in the middle of nowhere.
You wouldn't be wanting to rescue her, would you? She could be talked into running away, I imagine.
No, no. Whatever made you start getting me wrong?
Now, look, we drove a long way, Buster, just on the basis of some double talk and your letter, so let's start getting you right.
Double talk, nothing. It's even worse than when I wrote you. Hey, we'll sneak out the side here while the music makes them think we're still in the bar.
Okay.
That Stillman, he watches me like a hawk this time.
Where are we going?
Here. Outside, up the path here. See, I figured out which cabin it was, that one I stumbled into before. And Stillman, I think it was him wrote me the note telling me to stop being nosy.
All right, Mr. Detective.
Valentine, I got beat up. I could prefer charges, but we're going to figure it out instead. Here, turn right. Now, this place is broke, see? Not a penny. And those two in there, they hate each other. The only other person, the only one who's happy, it's the cook. I swear they never paid him a penny.
Wait a minute. The cook?
Yeah, Charlie George Washington.
What?
Yeah, he's been here 6 or 8 months. Malayan. Little guy takes an awful beating from Stillman. He always comes back with a grin, just like he owned the secret of the world.
The tears of sorrow, huh? So all that stuff wasn't just a gag?
Of course not.
The Malayan. And you also mentioned a knife in your face.
Yeah, Valentine, it was Charlie's cabin that I stumbled into. Here, this is it.
The curtains are all drawn.
Yeah. Always are. Long time ago, Stillman told me Charlie'd never let anybody near his room. I should have added 2 and 2 faster.
Hey, wait a minute, where are you going? Isn't Charlie here now?
It's his day off. Some big chicken ranch is down the valley. He always goes over to visit with his Oriental friends. Curtains all drawn. Door's locked tighter than a drum. This morning, I found that if you squeeze in the space between this and the empty cabin next door... Come on.
Yeah, okay, we're still with you. Watch those nails there, Angel.
No, I'm all right, George. I just had some idea of why we're squeezing...
Yes, Brooks, there's a window in here with curtains that are frayed. You can see through them.
What?
Yeah. Hey, you see? Inside Charlie's room there.
Look at the way it shines. And the fancy carving on it.
George, it must be solid silver. A silver casket.
Where would a little cook like that ever get enough money to
buy it? It'd take plenty to buy it. But there's something else. Doesn't it make you kind of wonder what's inside the casket?
Even a mark on him. Oh, yes, there is a little bruise on his jaw. But there he is, Brooksy, dead. In his own silver casket.
Well, Mr. Valentine, Charlie George Washington was not a young man.
Look, Doctor, look. You've seen the coffin. I've told you how the people acted, and there's that bruise.
So, somebody hit him, or maybe he bumped into a door. I treated this man once, Valentine, and the coffin fits in. Surely he must have bought it for himself. A philosopher, I guess. You see, his chest was weak, his heart was worse. He acted like the lord of the world, and at the same time, knew darn well he was dying.
Uh-huh, quite a guy, all right. But, Doctor, you can't kid me. Now,
get me straight, Valentine. I think he was murdered, too. But my testimony won't help you much. I can't prove the shock of a tap on the jaw did it any more than you can prove that he had a... buried treasure of some kind.
No, he didn't, I tell you. I know.
How do you know, Mr. Stillman?
Because I looked for it. In his shack, in his clothes. Even followed him to see if he ever buried anything. Of course, that's why I try to chase people away from him. Because I wanted to find it myself. Only I didn't. So, but I didn't do nothing wrong, did I?
All right. Lucy, let me ask you...
She don't know no more about it than I do, mister. You see, it's too bad now. Charlie's dead, that's all. It was an accident.
Sure. Maybe all the dough he ever had was invested in that fancy box.
You know, I might agree with you if Charlie was still alive. If there hadn't still been reason for somebody to slug him last night.
Gosh, I didn't even see him last night.
Neither did I.
Oh, no, of course not. Who else was staying here besides Guthrie?
Nobody.
Mac, if you're gonna...
Nobody, I said.
Well, now, look, don't argue about it. You're jealous of your wife, Mac, aren't you? She's nice looking. It wouldn't have been somebody that,
What? Right under his nose?
Shut up. Now, look, mister, we've been helpful enough now.
There's an empty cabin next to Charlie's. Guthrie says he saw you bringing fresh linen to it this morning.
Huh?
And it's happened before, yeah. He says he counted four dirty plates once when there were only three people.
Well, look, maybe I slept in that other cabin. See, and who cares?
Now, don't get excited, Buster.
Well, a couple of customers. If you'll pardon us, Mr. Oh,
yeah, he'll excuse you.
Hey, Mac.
Hey, the law.
Hey, Mac. Hey, Mac, all right.
Yeah.
Oh, I saw the doctor's car out front of here.
Yeah, cabin 14, officer. What's happened?
Accident up the highway. Almost got me and Pepper, too, here.
Hello, Pepper.
Hey, I got some people hurt out in the car.
You need me anymore?
Well, look, you want some help?
You need
no,
me anymore?
No. I'll drive them up to the cabin for the doc. Hey, put some coffee in that guy, will you? He almost got his truck turned over.
Pepper.
Yeah, come on, tell us, Pepper.
Oh, holy smoke, I can't stand the sight of them things. Oh, thanks, Mrs. Stillman. Got a piece of your fresh pie. Never mind. Coffee's too hot. Maybe it's whiskey I want.
Hey, friend, calm down.
Well, it's my egg truck, see? I run the pickup route out of here for the poultry outfits. It was an hour ago, maybe two. We've been working to get them people out. Tourists, car coming from the east.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what was it? Who got hit?
Well, I seen this car behind me coming like a bat out of... Oh, hey, excuse me, Mrs. Stillman.
Yeah, what?
Well, it was up in the curves. You know these mountains. Anyway, this crazy galoot is in such a hurry, he barrels right past me on a curve, and this other car's coming from the east right head on. The cop, he's right behind the eastern car. I slam into a ditch, and he skids sideways across the road. Oh, brother.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough, all right. This guy going so fast, he was coming from this direction.
And, Mac, before the cop gets back, there's something I got to tell you.
Huh? What do you mean?
Well, gosh, I'm sorry, but... This guy who's speeding who passes me, the cop says he's somebody broke a parole.
What are you talking about?
Now, take it easy. Take it easy. The cop says it's Bo Stillman, a cousin of yours.
What?
Yeah. Yeah, Mike, the cop seems to think Bo must have come from here. I just wanted to warn you. The cop says he'll bet you were hiding Bo out again.
Yeah, well, where is Bo? What happened to him?
He's dead, Mike. Other people only got injured. Bo's dead.
Oh.
So... There was somebody here in the empty cabin last night. Your cousin. And now he dies by a real accident while speeding away.
All right. All right, mister. Sure. Only look, I want to explain...
Never mind, Mac, not now. Besides, you better look after your wife. She just fainted.
Return to tonight's adventure of George Valentine in just a moment. How come neighbor Brown, who has a car several years older than yours, drives past you with a big, broad smile on his face? Well, looks like he's got that new car feeling. And how did he get it? Not by using a gasoline that contains engine-sticking gum, that's for sure. So it's a safe bet that neighbor Brown is using Chevron Supreme, the gasoline that's super refined to get rid of engine-sticking gum. This troublemaker, gum, comes from the impurities that are naturally present in most raw gasolines. And Chevron Supreme is the gasoline in the West that's super refined to eliminate gum. Just try it on your own car. You'll get and keep that new car feeling. Try it tomorrow for fast-starting, smooth pickup, ping-free power on hills, and for full mileage in the kind of driving you do. Ask for super refined Chevron Supreme at independent Chevron gas stations and standard stations, where they say and mean we take better care of your car. And now, back to tonight's adventure of George Valentine. I so happy, I got tears of sorrow. Those were the words of Charlie George Washington, the enigmatic little Malayan cook who was the only happy person at Stillman's Last Chance. The only happy person, yet in his room he had an ornate silver casket waiting. But now that Charlie is dead, you can't believe, somehow, that he wasn't murdered. But by whom? Max Stillman? His wife, Lucy, with the wandering eyes? Jeff Guthrie, the salesman who hired you? You settle on the prime suspect, a cousin of Max Stillman's hiding out from the law.
The only trouble is that cousin is now dead, too. This time from a real accident out on the highway. And so you talked to the highway patrolman who was there.
Well, Mr. Valentine, I told you how it happened. Oh, and Pepper here saw it better than I did.
Just streaking up the road he was. Come past me just
what
like
I
he
I want to know is why he was in such a hurry.
Well, the law wasn't closing in on him or anything. That's what you mean. Yeah, he didn't even know what part of the state he was in.
Somebody said he broke parole.
That's right, in Tucson. Yeah, he was one of those guys that's always in trouble. Max Stillman in there claims he was surprised to see Bo show up here. Yeah, just pulled in late last night and asked for a bed, then drove off first thing this morning.
Harboring a criminal.
Well, yeah, sure, to be technical. Oh, but Max's all right. He never done anything himself, I know of.
Pepper, do you know these people pretty well, the Stillmans?
Well, I've been making egg pickups for the big ranches over here for a couple of years, out of Williams and Flagstaff only. Well, I know.
All I mean is maybe you know some gossip about them.
Hmm? So, what are you driving at?
Well, how about Lucy Stillman and Max's cousin, Bo? That make any sense? Remember, she fainted when she heard about this.
Huh? Bo Stillman, 60 years old, with a face he never shaves and a mouthful of tobacco.
Oh, okay, we'll throw that one out.
Mrs. Stillman will. She smiles at just about everybody, mister.
That's right.
Well, now that's what intrigues me. That'll be the best cover-up for the fact that there really is some man beside her husband.
Well, gossips haven't got it pegged yet, and I'll tell you this, I don't hang around enough to find out. My wife sees to that.
Yeah, and I'm in the same boat.
Wait a minute, Pepper. Where are you going?
Well, gosh, I got a load of eggs standing out in the sun there, you know.
Oh, I'll run Pepper back up to where we left his truck and then get back to my job on the highway. Doc's getting an ambulance for those other people from the accident. They're taken care of, so...
So you think the law isn't needed anymore and I'm just stalling you, huh? Well, I am, officer, and I'll tell you the reason.
George.
Here, Brooksy.
George.
Yeah, right here, Brooksy.
Oh.
Did you get them?
Well, just the secretary on duty, but she'll locate her boss and have him call us back.
Hey, wait a minute. What's all this?
A funeral parlor in Phoenix, officer. The outfit whose nameplate is on that silver coffin of Charlie's.
Yeah? Well, what did they say?
Oh, you mean you are interested?
George, it was only sent to him on consignment. At least that's what the girl's record showed, but she said her boss...
Consignment, huh? So Charlie hadn't paid for the thing yet. Or if he had, it was only a deposit.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. Now there's a crime, isn't there? Because how could Charlie have expected to pay for that thing, or the funeral parlor expected to be paid, unless he did have some money hidden away? And where is it now?
Well, where was it at any time? Oh, I've heard those stories. People wondering why he was so happy, betting he had some hidden away.
Mac looked all over for the treasure and never found it.
Sure, and we've done a little looking ourselves. Only in the wrong places, Brooksy. We've never been obvious enough.
Hey,
give me that letter the salesman wrote us to bring us here. I'm beginning to wake up, Angel. Wait a minute. Yeah, here we are. Dear Mr. Valentine, you ever hear a little Malayan, you know the type, wears black earrings and white smiling teeth and so forth and so forth?
You mean black earrings?
Well, he always wore them, Valentine. Just black buttons.
Oh, no, he didn't. Not when we found the body.
George, you're right. There were just the marks on his ears.
Yeah, where his earrings used to be.
Well, I'll grant you, I never saw Charlie without him before.
It'd be a pretty good joke on people if his treasure were right in front of them. And listen to this. I so happy, I got tears of sorrow. I got the tears of sorrow. Pearls, maybe. Tear-shaped pearls.
Hmm?
Brooksy, do you have any idea what a fortune a pair of matched black pearls would be worth?
No, I haven't.
Holy smoke. I have.
I guess you're not leaving now, eh, officer?
Huh? Oh, hey, Pepper.
Yeah?
I'll flag a car to take you back to your truck.
Okay.
Valentine, we're going to comb this place from kitchen to towel racks.
Okay, friend, we'll look for earrings, all right. But it's the person who knocked Charlie down and took him off him that I want. It's Charlie's murderer that we're going to find.
It's a little out of my line, Miss Brooks. The old-fashioned swoon.
No, it happens to anybody. With all the excitement going on here.
Honey, you don't know how mixed up and upset you can get when you're married to a police dog like that. I guess that isn't any worry of yours.
Did you see Bo Stillman when he was here last night?
Gosh, no. I mean, it was a complete surprise when I found he was here. But I didn't talk to him or anything. Sit down, won't you?
Oh, thank you. This is a nice room. You didn't see Charlie last evening either, did you?
Not after dinner, Dishes. Then I did some baking. Mac, he was asleep already. I went out for a little walk.
Mm-hmm.
Poor little Charlie. Mac was rough with him sometimes, but I never was. Hey, why'd you come in here? What do you want?
I told you. Just to see how you were feeling.
No, you didn't. You thought I was up front in the lunchroom.
All right, have it your own way.
Well, what do you want? What do you come snooping here for?
Lucy, what's in the little bag behind the door there?
Hey, you get out of there. You get out of there. Put that down.
Oh, that's the best.
Well,
aren't we nice girls, though?
Oh, I'm sorry, Miss Brooks. Only please don't open that. There's nothing important in there.
I'm sorry, too, Lucy. You're right. It isn't what I was looking for. I just thought what gaudy decorations a pair of pearls would make for...
For a gaudy girl, is that what you were going to say?
No, I... Well, anyway, they're not here. Only a change of underwear, slip, roll of $30, $40, $50. Extra stockings. When were you planning on running away?
None of your business. It's none of your business.
Well, we're saved by the bell, George. Yeah.
Why, Mr. Valentine, we was just
having a
talk.
No,
when
come
she
on, Brooksy, never mind.
What?
Mrs. Stillman, a deputy sheriff's going to stay here until we get back. To make his job easy, we'll take Guthrie with us.
George.
We're going for a ride with a highway patrol, Angel. Lucy, that husband of yours got away. He must have taken out of here faster than his cousin ever drove.
Well, here's where the wreck was, Mr. Valentine.
I don't see any Dodge parked around. That's what Mac drives.
Yes, George. If Mac stopped here, he's already gone.
How about it? You see any tracks, officer?
I can't tell a thing. The wrecker and the ambulance that picked up Bo must have backed all over the shoulders there.
Well, that's what Mac must be following. The wreck itself and the ambulance. The body of Bo.
Yeah. If the pearls were in the wreck, I don't see how they could have got thrown clear. Must still be in the wrecked car someplace. Or in Bo's pocket. Halfway under Mountain View by now.
Valentine, maybe I'm just a thick-headed...
You know, I think it's a very simple crime that's piled up like a snowball.
Simple? With silver caskets and Malayans?
Still, it all boils down to this. Charlie had something worth money, and one or more people figured that out.
Well, I grant you that...
Bo Stillman spent the night in the cabin next door to Charlie's.
Oh, I get it. The window. He could have looked in, spotted the coffin, got curious, and gone over.
Obviously,
there.
That's what Mac thinks happened. Come on, let's get after him.
I must be getting on him, sir. There's Pepper's egg truck up ahead.
Well, come on, officer. Step on
it. All right.
Can't you get by the truck now?
Well, I can't see how. I'll give Pepper a touch of the siren so he'll let us pass him.
You know, I've been thinking about Lucy. The way she's been acting all day. Nervous Nellie. Oh, I doubt if she'd tap Charlie on the jaw herself. But suppose her accomplice did. Her boyfriend.
Valentine, I told you once before, I never saw
much... Can't you get past that guy, officer?
Shoulder's too soft for Pepper to pull over and let us by.
Listen, Guthrie, listen. Suppose Lucy's nervous because everything's gone wrong. A tap on the jaw didn't just knock Charlie out, it killed him. And then there was Bo Stillman, the cabin next door. And suppose he didn't do it himself, but suppose he saw it done.
Look, I'm still telling you,
A little crime with everything going wrong and snowballing. And the ones who did it scared to death, running.
These blasted curves. These slow trucks.
There. Pepper's waving at it. Come on, he can see.
Yeah, it's a nice guy. Hey!
Give me that!
Let go of that wheel.
George!
Hang on, hit the brakes. It wasn't Charlie who was murdered, it was Bo Stillman.
What?
Pepper's a nice guy, huh? He can see if there's any cars coming.
Oh!
No cars coming, huh? Well, it's not the kind of a murder you could plan. But for a guy running, a guy scared to death, yeah, it could have messed us up pretty bad. Almost as badly as Bo Stillman.
Oh, George.
Now, let me do the driving, officer. You want to be free to use a gun on that guy, Pepper.
I'll get out, Mr. Valentine. Gee, back there, I didn't see that other car coming.
Oh, no, not much.
Honest, I was just...
Man, on your leg, stop wobbling.
Well, look, I haven't done nothing.
No, you just tapped a guy on the jaw to get some pearls for a girl.
Huh?
I should have guessed you were Lucy's boyfriend, Pepper. You've been on this run for a couple of years, you said. Pick up fresh eggs, so you have to come out at night. Lucy said she went for a little walk last night. Did some baking, too, she said. I remember you seemed to know she had fresh pine.
Look, Mr. Valentine, I'd never kill anybody as long as I live.
Unless you got scared.
No, no.
I know how that bowl of jelly in your head works. Last night you got the pearls. Only Bo Stillman saw you, and you knew it. So instead of you and Lucy running away right then, you wait until morning, knowing Bo will try to get you alone for a little shakedown.
Look, Valentine, listen,
Bo knows
you got...
where to find you. Follows you down the highway. You know he'll try to pass you so he can flag you down. Yeah. Well, now, maybe you didn't plan it that way, but you got the nastiest idea I ever heard of. You waved him to pass on when you could see another car was coming.
Look, Valentine, you gotta believe me. You gotta... What else could I do? When I hit Charlie, he died. When his day off was over, what people would have gone in and found he'd been murdered.
You're wrong, Pepper. They wouldn't have.
What?
It never could have been proved.
What's that?
The doctor told me that. But, Buster, you overheard the cop and me figuring out the pearls and talking about a murderer. And then when you heard the siren and saw the red light and us right behind you... The temptation was too much, wasn't it?
No.
Pepper, I think you proved you're fit to hang.
George, that service was really something.
Yeah, it sure was all right. People wearing top hats. The works.
None of these people even knew the little guy.
Charlie George Washington wasn't quite the usual man.
Little, lonely, sick fellow. Wonder what he thought about.
Oh, he was a pretty sharp operator. He made a good deal with the funeral parlor. Had them send out his coffin in advance. He arranged for all this.
Yeah. Look what it cost him. His pearls, his earrings. He'd already signed them over to this outfit. If you ask me, he might have cashed them in earlier and enjoyed his life.
Yeah. Maybe he just wanted to enjoy something else.
The bluebird, huh? The pot of gold at the end of the rainbow.
Mm-hmm, that's what I mean. I guess only Charlie had the answer.
Yeah. Keep it in the future. The dream.
Yes, darling, but you can overdo this future business, you know.
Huh?
Hey, what is this?
Well, it's just a private little joke, Guthrie. Drop you someplace?
If your car has an oil filter, don't forget that it's a real money saver for you, but only if it is serviced every 6 to 8,000 miles. Neglect the oil filter beyond that mileage and it readily becomes a liability by letting dirt, grit, and carbon circulate through precision-fitted engine parts. You can actually see and feel the difference by comparing a new filter element with one that's used up. You'll find the new one weighs less than a pound. And the old saturated one may easily weigh 4 or 5 pounds. A new oil filter element, by the way, is not only the surest way to keep fresh oil clean longer and to protect your motor, it's also the most economical. So if you haven't had that wear-saving filter cartridge replaced in 8,000 miles, why not do it tomorrow? It's another protective car saver service you can get at independent Chevron gas stations and standard stations where they say and mean... We take better care of your car. Tonight's adventure of George Valentine has been brought to you by Standard Oil Company of California on behalf of independent Chevron gas stations and Standard stations throughout the West. Robert Bailey is starred as George. Let George Do It is written by David Victor and Jackson Gillis and directed by Don Clark. Virginia Gregg appeared as Brooksy. Alan Reed was heard as Guthrie, Louise Arthur as Lucy, Larry Dobkin as Mac, Phil Boucher as the officer, and Walter Burke as Pepper. The music is composed and presented by Eddie Dunstetter, your announcer, John Heaston. Listen again next week, same time, same station, to Let George Do It. This is the Mutual Don Lee Broadcasting System. Time now for Rocky Jordan.
Not far from the Mosque Sultan Hassan in Cairo stands the Cafe Tambourine, run by Rocky Jordan. The Cafe Tambourine, crowded with forgotten men, alive with the babble of many languages. For this is Cairo, where modern adventure and intrigue unfold against a backdrop of antiquity. Tonight's story, Desert Betrayal.
There are five times in a day when a foreigner like myself tries to stay off the streets of Cairo. That's at dawn, noon, late afternoon, sunset, and just after dusk, when the muezzin appears in his minaret to call the faithful to prayer. At that moment, all activity stops, and the devout Muslim kneels on his rug facing Mecca. Keeping away from them at those times is one respect we can pay their religion, and they appreciate that respect. But I guess I wasn't watching the clock this particular evening. My Cafe Tambourine still held the intense heat of the day, so I got out and walked down the crowded Sharia Lagoon toward the Nile to try and catch a cool breeze. I just stopped to glance at a big poster, something about a rally for the politician El Marmad Bey, when I heard the voice of the muezzin in the minaret high above me. Suddenly, all sounds of activity stopped as the natives faced east, their foreheads to the ground. As quick as I could, I ducked back through a narrow passage off the street that led to the winding stairs of the minaret. I waited there until sounds from the street told me prayers were over and the Cairenes were again about their business. Then I was about to be on my way when... The scream came from the minaret. As I turned and looked up, I saw the bearded muezzin in his flowing robes stagger out of the tower, pitch headlong down the winding stairway. He rolled over and over, and he didn't stop till he sprawled at the bottom, almost at my feet. It was like something out of a bad opera. For a split second, I couldn't move. But the red splotches from stab wounds spreading across his white robe snapped me out of it, and I rushed over to him. All right, easy there. Try not to move. Who did this? You've got to tell me. Listen, who did it? I guess he figured he was done for, and there was a look almost of ecstasy on his kindly face. But I didn't want to give up that easy. I made a move to try and stop the bleeding when I heard heavy footsteps coming down the stairway. It was another figure in the robes of a muezzin, only he had a black field boots on. Come on, hurry up, will you? Help me with this man.
Shut up and get back.
We gotta work fast, he's sure
to die. Quiet, I said, and move.
I'm not
Must
going anywhere.
I tell you again.
Since when does a muezzin carry a Luger?
Don't touch him. You've stepped in where it doesn't concern you.
Yeah, maybe it's lucky I did.
Think again, my friend. It's your misfortune.
I felt the blow of his heavy Luger across my face, and that was all. Only a roaring like a calm scene on the desert, and me spinning with the wind, till it seemed to pitch me back down to the foot of the minaret. The pain in my head drove me to my senses, and when I opened my eyes, it was pitch dark. The dead body of the kindly muezzin lay beside me. Just as I realized I was clutching something tightly in my hand, a flashlight stabbed right in my eye.
So, it is you, Mr. Jordan. Get up at once.
Well, good hunting, Greco. Who called you?
There was no police call. Ali!
Alva, Sergeant Greco.
Take the knife from this man.
Knife?
The one in your hand, Mr. Jordan. You need not feign surprise. You do not deceive me.
Getting ideas already, Greco?
Hand over the knife.
I'll take it. I don't use knives.
Indeed. However, it was in your hand, stained with the blood of the sacred muezzin lying dead by your side.
Look, don't you know a plant when you see one?
Enough! This time you have overstepped yourself, Mr. Jordan.
Okay, arrest me. Get it over with.
Perhaps that will not be necessary. I need only to call the people in from the street to witness this thing.
What are you getting at?
When the news spreads that their revered religious leader has met violent death by the hands of an unbeliever, you will be disposed of very quickly.
You'd like that, wouldn't you?
I would be helpless against the mob. You see, Mr.
Better Jordan? Get some sense now, Greco. If the Muezzin's death gets out, there'll be a lot of repercussions. You think Sabaya'd put another stripe on your sleeve if that happened?
My personal ambitions have nothing to do with this.
Think it over.
Mr. Jordan, you will understand that I had no intention of disclosing this to anyone as yet.
Sure, Greco, sure.
Ellie, bring another man. You will take the muezzin to the minaret and hide his remains there.
It will be done.
One moment. Under no circumstances will you breathe a word of this to anyone. Is that clear?
It is, Sergeant Greco. Quickly
now. And you, Mr. Jordan, will come with me.
Greco waited only long enough to watch his aides lift the Moesan and carry him carefully up the steep winding steps to the tower. As they disappeared into the dark, he gave me a shove and I walked ahead out into the street. Neither of us spoke a word on our ride to headquarters. I was taken to Sabaya's office and a couple of guards held me there for maybe half an hour till Sam made his appearance. Greco was with him and they motioned the guards outside. It was all just a little too deliberate. Greco been telling you things, Sam?
Keep silent until spoken to, Mr. Jordan.
Then let's get at it.
Jordan, I have Greco's statement. You were found at the foot of the Mongar minaret beside the dead body of the Muezzin.
Did he tell you I'd been knocked out cold, Sam?
A trick, Captain. He was trapped and could do nothing but pretend that he also had been attacked.
Then explain the shape my face is in, Greco.
Your face is smashed up in many ways.
One moment,
Mr. Jordan.
Greco. Now, Jordan, I will hear your full explanation of this affair.
I was standing at the foot of the tower stairs during the last call to prayer.
Did you, an American, not know better than to be there at such a time?
I ducked in there to get off the street.
Go on.
And the Muezzin rolled down the steps right at my feet. Before I could get anything out of him, somebody else in a Muezzin's robe showed up.
There is no other Muezzin at the minaret.
You're right, Greco. He wasn't a Muezzin. He wasn't an Egyptian. He had on German field boots and he carried a Luger.
Jordan, what fantastic tale are you trying to make me
listen
believe?
Listen to me, Sam. The guy roughed me up against the wall and then slapped his gun across my face.
He's lying, Capitan. Ask Mr. Jordan how he got this knife in his hand. You can see for yourself.
Put the knife on the desk, Greco. I do not wish to look at it again.
As you wish. The Muezzin had been stabbed 4 times. I thought it best, under the circumstances, to have his body hidden in the minaret.
Yes, 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 yes. You acted most wisely, Greco.
I was only doing my duty, Captain Sabaya.
Jordan, about this man with the Luger. Would you recognize him if you saw him again?
You bet I would.
You have told me everything?
That's right.
And you can explain nothing of the other similar acts of violence against our holy men here in Cairo?
Well, there have been others.
This is the third Muezzin to die in the past month, all by the knife.
But why, Sam? What's it all about?
I do not know, but I intend to find out. Jordan, there are things a man like you would not understand, that my people take their religion most seriously. Quite often, our emotions become strongly involved.
Well, maybe I do understand, Sam. Every man has a religion, whether he knows it or not.
But there are differences.
Sure. I've knocked around enough to learn to respect another man's beliefs. That's why I get off the street.
We will not go over that again.
Oh, okay, but you can't hold me, Sam.
Indeed I can, Jordan. You will be committed to jail pending further investigation.
So that's the way it is.
That will be all. Greco, I must hurry to the El Mahmoud Bey political rally. We have promised him police protection. Put Jordan in a cell.
This way, Mr. Jordan.
Oh, Greco, you had best place him in the old cell block across the alley and under heavy guard.
I know better than to try and figure out what goes on in Sabaya's mind, but I had a hunch he was locking me up more than anything for my own protection. And the old cell block would be the last place a mob would try and hunt me out. Greco made a big thing of it as he and two others directed me down a corridor to the back door. A dim bulb over the entrance was all that lit the alley. Greco motioned across to a dingy sandstone building about 30 feet on down, and I moved ahead. I had taken not more than a dozen steps when it began to happen. A whole bunch of them came out of nowhere. Everyone hooded, surrounded Greco and his guards. Made quick
stop
work of it.
Stop it once! I command you!
One of the hooded men was out of the scuffle and had me by the arm.
Get moving, Jordan.
What is this?
We call it a rescue.
Maybe I don't want it.
Shut up, you fool. Now move!
By that time, they were all around me, dragging me up the alley. Somewhere back, I could hear an alarm sounding and the shouts of more men running out of headquarters. But already, we had reached a side street where a light field truck was waiting, its motor running. The hooded figures piled me in. The driver put it in gear, wheels spun, and we were careening off down the narrow, winding streets. Well, we must have traveled every side street in Cairo to shake the police. Finally, the truck roared across the Boulak Bridge of the Nile, through Giza, on west and north above the Nile Valley as it meets the desert. As the truck picked up speed, the men relaxed their grip on me, peering ahead to the onrushing road, so I had a chance to look them over. Well, the top man had called it to a rescue, but I knew better. Every one of them was wearing German field boots and carrying a Luger. The jump was a risk, but I knew there was nothing alongside but soft sand and was the only way. I waited till we hit a sharp, bumpy curve, and I was off and rolling.
The fourth time over, I was on my feet, clawing my way through the brush. Then they opened up. I dived for a ditch with the wind knocked out of me. They stayed there, my face in the sand, waiting for them to flush me out, knowing exactly what would happen when they did.
You are listening to Desert Betrayal, tonight's adventure with Rocky Jordan. Travel to the ends of the earth tomorrow night with Dick Powell and Sidney Hasso, who will recreate their original screen roles on CBS Radio Theater. To the Ends of the Earth is the story of the exposé of an international narcotics ring, and makes for an exciting story. Remember Dick Powell and Sidney Hasso tomorrow, Monday night, at 6. Now we return you to Cairo and tonight's adventure with Rocky Jordan, Desert Betrayal.
It was a peaceful evening as I stood at the foot of the minaret and listened to the muezzin's call to prayer. But all that was changed a few seconds later when the muezzin lay dying at my feet. A man wearing German field boots and a gun to match planted the killing on me. Not long after, as I was being taken to a jail cell, the same man with a lot of helpers broke it up, dumped me in a truck, and roared out into the desert. I remember jumping from the speeding truck, some gunshots, and not much more, till a breath of air hit me. And it wasn't air off the desert. It smelled of cheap gin, like my cafe tambourine after a hard night. It came from somebody bending over me.
Get up, monsieur, before they find you.
Where are they?
Searching the brush and the other side of the sand dune. Up with you now.
Yeah. Where are we going?
To my hut. Only a little way. Allez, monsieur, allez!
Somehow she got me to her hut and dropped me on a cot. The dive off the truck must have jolted me plenty because right then I passed out for a while. Well, the next thing I knew, it was daylight and I was wide awake and choking for breath. She was sharing her cheap gin with me.
The gin, it helps, n'est-ce pas?
Oh, they sell stuff that bad?
Oh, so it is champagne you wish.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I woke up too quick.
Oh, it is nothing.
Anyhow, you took a lot of chances, sister.
I am Suzette. Perhaps another drink now?
No, thanks.
As you wish.
Any of those guys come around?
No, monsieur. They went away.
Looks like you got a good hideout here.
Oh, well, we all hide from something, n'est-ce pas?
Yeah, me from too many things.
You do not tell me who you are, monsieur.
The name's Jordan.
And an American who flees from many men with guns on the desert.
Oh, I hopped off a truck. They were taking me someplace.
But why?
Your guess is as good as mine.
Many trucks have been going into the desert.
Yeah? Where to, Suzette?
I do not know. But something is going on out there. You were captured, monsieur?
Oh, rescued, they called it.
You make a strange riddle.
Oh, yeah, it's a beauty. The Muezzin is stabbed to death in Cairo. Not the first to be killed. But whoever did it figured I knew too much. Before the police could salt me away, this gang grabbed
me. Monsieur, what were they like?
Well, they weren't Muslims. They were men who speak good English and carry Lugas.
Oh, sacrinum.
You got it figured, Suzette?
Oh, always it is the same. So it was with the betrayal of France. Always I do not realize...
What are you talking about?
Monsieur, in France they call me a traitor. It was not so. I did not know I was being used by the enemy.
It makes some sense, huh?
Oh, now I am a poor French woman in Egypt without credentials. I must exist as best I can. When there is an opportunity to sell munitions and guns into Egypt, what can I do?
The trucks are taking munitions into the desert?
Oui. But I did not know.
Who's the deal with, Suzette?
It is a bad deal.
Come on, never mind the gin. Who'd you sell the stuff to?
Well, there is a man named Frank Kruller.
Where do I find him?
A houseboat on the Nile. The Habia 16.
All right, let's have some more.
Oh, no, monsieur, already I have said too much. You rest now. You will need much strength for what is ahead.
So I waited out the burning heat of the day in her hut. All the time I tried to get more out of her about Kruller and the munitions going into the desert. How that tied in with the Moazin's death. But from then on, Suzette closed up tighter than the cap on a bottle of Coke. Well, with a little food and a lot of sleep, I was ready to go by sundown. Suzette helped me into Giza. From then on, I was on my own. I thumbed a ride across the bridge, but before I went down along the river, I decided on a phone call.
Captain Sabaya speaking.
Hello, Sam.
Jordan, so it is you?
I just didn't want you to worry about me.
Where are you? What are you doing?
Oh, relax. I'm all right, I tell you. You don't have to rescue me.
Rescue you, indeed. You will return to headquarters at once.
Sorry, I got a big date.
Where are you going?
To see a guy named Kruller.
Kruller?
Frank Kruller. Any objections, Sam?
Jordan, listen to me. There are things you do not understand.
Why not?
You are not a Muslim, but I am, and I can tell you that you are in great danger. For your own protection, come back to jail.
Thanks for the advice. See you later, Sam.
Jordan, for the last time...
Then I was on my way to see Kruller. I couldn't have missed his dahabiyah on the Nile if I'd tried. It was a floating palace, all lit up with music coming from someplace and real important-looking people going on board. With a day's growth of beard and so on, I wasn't exactly in shape for a party, but I went anyhow. Only a big pile of mussels at the entrance stood in my way.
Retrace your steps, offender.
Don't get upset, Buster. I didn't come to see you.
State your business here.
Maybe I got invited.
Only those of influence and wealth come here tonight.
Something real special, huh?
A reception in honor of the great El Marmad Bey.
I've known bigger politicians.
Yeah. Back to the streets with you, English.
Not till I see Frank Kruller.
He's not here.
Well, let's look around.
Yeah, back now. Stop it, Carl.
What is going on here?
Somebody was coming through the lighted doorway toward us. The one man I wanted to see more than anyone else. I'd last seen him under the minaret as he slapped a Luger in my face.
Who is this man?
He is no one. I tell him to go away.
I will handle him, Jerub. So it is you, Jordan.
Yeah. I take it you're Kruller.
I am. You know, Jordan, you interest me.
I'll bet.
You made good your escape last night. Is it not foolhardy to walk back into another trap?
Not if it gets some answers.
It so happens that I would like to talk to you, too. Come this way.
No, no, let's talk here.
Sorry. I fear you have no choice.
A glance at the shadows told me there were others besides Jarub covering for Kruller. So I followed along, with Jarub close behind. We went down some steps away from the party going on above, through a narrow corridor to a door that Kruller opened. He motioned me in. I was face to face with a guest of honor. One Napoleon-sized, puffy, gimlet-eyed Egyptian politician sporting a monocle. El Marmad Bey.
Who is this man, Kruller?
The person who persists in making trouble for us, El Marmad Bey.
Ah, Jordan, of course. Excellent, excellent.
You the top man in this deal, Marmad Bey?
Perhaps more than you know. What audacious motive brings you here?
A lot of question marks about guns and munitions you got your hands on. Stuff that's being hatched out in the desert somewhere.
Most interesting. From whom did you learn this?
Oh, skip it, Marmad. I'm not on your side yet.
I had hardly hoped for that. What else you know, Jordan?
Just that you're playing for something pretty big. Killing Muslim leaders is dangerous business.
What are a few lives if they serve my purpose?
You tell me.
El Mahmoud Bey, your time is most valuable. The others are waiting.
As you say, Cruella, the hour grows short. Jordan, finding the source of your information and how much of it you have divulged to others is most important to my cause.
I'll bet it is.
We have ways of getting it from you.
With a Luger?
Wait, Cruella. Jordan, who else knows you have come on this dahabiyah?
A lot of people.
It is possible. Let him go, Cruella. What happens to this man after he leaves here, you may decide.
Of course. Jarub, bring the others. Throw this man out.
At once, master.
Aren't you up to it yourself, Kruller?
No, no, not that way, Jarub. Out the window. Perhaps, Jordan, the waters of the Nile will drive you to your senses before it's too late.
Hey, I got plenty of Nile water, all right, but I didn't head for the shore. I saw them moving along the bank waiting for me. Then a little boat took off downstream trying to pick me up. But they didn't know I was hanging onto the anchor chain. In a little while, I was pulling myself back into the little room. It was empty now. The noise of the party upstairs covered for me, and I started looking around. A couple of shoves, and I had the closet door open. What was inside didn't surprise me. A stack of small arms, Lugers, Mannlicher rifles, and cases of ammunition. Next, I tried the desk in the corner. The minute I cracked the top drawer, I had what I wanted. It was a list of various muezzins in Cairo. The top three names were scratched out, and I figured they were the ones who had already died. Maybe the rest were next. But it didn't say why. I folded the sheet and shoved it in my pocket. Suddenly, there was a soft step from behind. Before I could move, there was a silken cord around my neck, drawn tighter and tighter, and once more, thick blackness poured in. I was slow in coming out of it. First, I thought I was still lying at the minaret beside the dead muezzin. Then I was in a ditch with a gin-soaked woman bending over me. Finally, I opened my eyes. The light from a window almost blinded me. Outside, I could see other buildings, and I knew we were in some abandoned army camp. I tried to move, and I realized I was tied securely to a chair. The bare room held just me and Frank Crueler.
I salute you, Jordan. For a chance adversary, you have proved quite formidable.
Skip the build-up, Crueler. Where are we?
To the south is the Guattara Depression. It was used as an anchor in the battle for Egypt.
Only you're using the place for something else.
As a temporary hideout, it serves our purpose.
Any munitions dumped, too?
Spare your strength, Jordan. You'll need it.
Like for what?
El Mahmoud Bey, Mr. Jordan awaits you.
Well, Jordan.
For a man with big plans, Marmont, you give me lots of attention. Why?
Because I wish to know what people are in possession of certain information. Who are they?
I'll give you an answer. But to my question, not yours.
Because I soon will become master of Egypt.
Yeah.
It will be done.
El Mahmoud, is it wise?
Let him know. There are but three of us, Crueler. He has no means of escape but the eternal sand.
Thanks, my man. I know about the munitions and guns. Now, where's your army?
You Americans are indeed naive. Superior intelligence is more powerful than armies.
Your brains and who else?
At this moment, my loyal followers are at strategic points in Cairo and elsewhere in Egypt, awaiting the hour.
You think that's all it takes?
Clive took India with only 123 men, Mr. Jordan.
I had it right, didn't I? You start out killing a few muezzins, one by one. Nothing upsets a Muslim quicker than an offense toward his leaders.
And now more of the muezzins are to die. When the people see their government is unable to cope with the atrocities, they will rise up and overthrow it.
You got it all figured out, haven't you?
Already there have been incidents. Soon the anger of the populace will move it to frenzy. There will be uprisings growing in violence.
That's when you step in.
Yes. At that moment, the great El Mahmoud Bey will appear as their liberator.
Yeah. The only trouble is it won't work.
Indeed. Again, the mind of the West finds the mind of the East an insoluble riddle.
Well, don't get me wrong, Marmot. You might use the religion of your people to get into power. Only you've forgotten one thing.
Yes. What is that?
Your people will still have their religion. How long do you think they'll be fooled? We Americans have a saying for that, if you're interested.
I am not. Your interest, Jordan, is in your own welfare.
Well, think about it. When the people find out they've been duped, what do you think happens to you?
At that time, my power over them will be assured. Egypt will enter an era greater than the pharaohs ever knew.
Hold it, Marmot. Back that idea up with some more figures. Give me one example of a tyranny founded on religious oppression that has ever lasted.
Mr. Jordan, the fact of the moment is that you will die. Tell us what we wish to know, and death will be swift and painless.
And if I don't?
Death in the desert is very slow. No man has ever withstood the heat or the sun in his eyes. Need I say more?
I get the general idea.
What is your answer, Jordan?
I told you, it won't work.
Mm-hmm. Very well. Crueler, take him outside.
I suggest that you turn your attention to me, El Marmad Bey.
At first, I didn't recognize him without his uniform. But it wasn't a mirage. It was Captain Sam Sabaya. Kruller grabbed his Luger from the table as Sam kept walking right on in.
How did you get here?
That's important, Kruller.
Watch that Luger, Sam. I'm tied here. I can't help you.
That will not be necessary, Jordan.
So, Captain Sabaya, the desert must claim another victim.
That we shall soon see, El Marmad Bey.
But you had no way of knowing.
Not everything, but certain things have come to my attention. When Jordan phoned me he was going to Kruller's Dahabiya, I followed along, and I've been following ever since.
You think your authority amounts to anything here?
My authority and my uniform remain in Cairo. I come here only as a Muslim, to right a grievous offense to my religion.
You come to this forsaken place alone, without even the proof?
You can find proof, Sam. Look in the other buildings. They're loaded with arms. Search Kruller's houseboat.
In good time, Jordan.
Enough of this. Kruller, dispose of this man at once.
A very great pleasure.
Kruller aimed, and then it happened quicker than I could follow. Sam's foot came up a second before the shot, and the gun clattered across the room. Kruller dived in. Sam crouched like a panther and then slammed Kruller over his head with the arms of El Marmad Bey, and they went down. I'd always thought Sam was pudgy and slow-moving, but he gave me the show of my life. He used every trick on those two guys, and I'd have been holding a lot more. Second time Marmad came up, his stomach got mixed up with the left. He was finished. But Kruller tried for more. All the time, I couldn't move. Kruller went to work with his heavy boots, and that's where he made another big mistake. Sam flipped him into a corner, where he piled up like a stack of ten pins. Then suddenly, it was all over. Yeah, I could book you for a main event, Sam.
Jordan, you will make no joke about this. Such tactics are most distasteful to me.
Okay. How about getting me loose here, huh?
Well, you will tell no one of this incident.
Sure, just untie me.
You know, Jordan, there are many things that you do not comprehend.
Sam, get me out of here. Well, Sam finally untied me. We got El Marmad Bey and Kruller back into Cairo, and from then on, Sam was his old official self. It didn't take him long to round up all the Bey's loyal followers, and I don't have to tell you what happened to them after that. I was going to send Suzette a case of good gin, but she'd done a fade-out, and nobody tried very hard to find her. Me? Oh, I've learned a few things. Sam Sabaya has given me jiu-jitsu lessons.
It's CBS, again at this same time, next week, for another story of adventure and intrigue, when we take you back to Cairo and the Café Tambourine, run by Rocky Jordan. Jack Moyles plays the title role, with tonight's script by Larry Roman and Gomer Kuhl, from a story by E. Jack Newman. Rocky Jordan is produced and directed by Cliff Howell, with original music by Richard Arant. Larry Thor speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That's case closed for this week. Remember, you can find past episodes of this show and a bunch more old time radio at relicradio.com. There's also links there to our forum, Shoutcast stream with even more old-time radio, and everything else Relic Radio. So donate button there as well if you'd like to help support this and all the shows. Thank you very much to those who have, and thank you for joining me today. Talk to you again next Wednesday with another episode of Case Closed. Case Closed is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.